Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting. Each week, I speak with authors, experts, and thought leaders on everything from American history and democracy to how to be a better person on the internet. And don't miss my extremely popular docuseries, which educate you on things you never learned in history class. Follow and listen to Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Arthur Smith, the story of the week in many ways, linked to the North Carolina job. They contacted him. Some different interpretations of how Smitty responded to that yesterday, some saying he completely shut it down, others like me saying he absolutely left the door open, and why wouldn't you, in a way? And then there's the question of, is he good at what he's doing with the Steelers? Is he good at his job this year? I think it's been a lot of mixed results. If you would have asked me a couple games ago, like 3 games ago, I probably would have given him in the high B range. Now it's low B to, you know, C-plus type stuff. There's too many areas. I mean, they just jumped into the AFC North here, the division they're trying to win, and delivered 2 offensive duds. They stink in the red zone. They stink at third downs. You know what else they stink at? Short yardage. Kevin Gorman from the Trib. Steelers have converted 57.9% on 3rd-and-1 this season. 11 of 19. That's horrible. Especially for a group, a team that considers itself to be big, nasty, and physical and is built that way. They're 8 of 14, which isn't very good either, on 3rd-and-2. On 4th down, Gorman reports, the Steelers are 6 of 10 on 4th-and-1. That's just not good enough. 60% isn't good enough. And 1 of 2 on 4th-and-2. Like Mike Tomlin says, you know, if you can't get a yard, are you really, you know, a championship team? And they're getting a little over half the time on 3rd-and-1. That's awful. The only teams worse than them in the red zone, I think, are the Cowboys and the Giants. There's only 2 worse than them. The Patriots are better than them, if you can even fathom that. Now, there have been some good areas too. They're absolutely more explosive. You know, they've actually put up 400-yard games and 30-point games, which were either scarce or non-existent for the whole Matt Canada era. But it's not good enough yet, that's for sure. And it's got to get better over these final 6 games because the Steelers are going to get scored on. Not every game. I like their defense. It's a good defense, not a great defense. They're going to have to match points with somebody. I don't know who it is yet. Might be this weekend with Burrow. Got another game potentially with Burrow to end the season.
You have an Eagles offense that's unbelievably potent. You have the Chiefs, who, in spite of their issues this year, still have a top 10 offense. They're better than the Steelers offense, and they have a really good defense. But my point there is you're going to have to score more, I think. Plus, you have Baltimore in Baltimore. Maybe you hold them down again. Maybe you're pushing the odds to do that. Let's get to the phone lines. Let's start with Greg in Youngstown. What's up, Greg?
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Do I blame the offensive coordinator when we can't block anybody? That game in Cleveland,
yeah.
Wilson almost got mauled, like mauled in that game.
Yeah, I do. I mean, on short yardage, I certainly do. Work your way around it. Find something else to do, and maybe the head coach too. Then line up and think you're the bigger men, and we're going to play tough Pittsburgh Steelers football, and we'll hand it to Jaylen Warren from 6 yards deep. Find something else to do on third and one or fourth and one.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
Connor Hayward stinks. You got this guy as a lead blocker. He gets blown away every time as a lead blocker. I mean, it's ridiculous why he's a lead blocker in running plays short distance.
Well,
the guy's not good.
We had a conversation about that earlier this week. He's certainly not an ideal blocking fullback when he's in that role, and he's not being used in any other role. That's a point.
Oh, he's a waste.
That's a decent point right now. I actually think they should throw to him more. Anything else, Greg?
No, one more thing, too. I'm going to just go back to Cleveland game real quick. That last series we had.
Yeah.
What do we have, 3 or 4 yards to get the first down? Wasn't
four.
It three
yeah.
or four?
Yep.
Why weren't they trying to go third and fourth down? Because that punter was not going to punt in that weather. Why were they playing to punt the ball, too? It's like, just go for it, man. What are you afraid of?
Well, so nothing. They went for it the whole game and couldn't get it.
But if you punt, think they score and you don't punt. You don't punt and they score quicker than they did before, than they later on. At least you got the ball with 2 minutes. You know, I mean, at least you got the ball with more time on the clock. They play really dumb football. I'm telling you this. And it's Tomlin. I blame that guy, so I'll let you go.
Thank you, Greg. He sounded rather angry today, the day after Thanksgiving.
Maybe he didn't have a good meal yesterday.
But yeah, that to his first point, the reason that I don't give Arthur Smith a lower grade is he has had to work around major issues on the offensive line, to be fair. I mean, their first round pick is out for the year, I think, still. James Daniels was rated by Pro Football Focus as the best player in his position at the time he was injured. They had a problem at center for a couple games. So that does make it more difficult, but eventually, you got to work around it. Who's next here? Jeremy, go ahead.
Hey, Joe, how are you?
Good. What's up?
Not too much. So I like Artie Smith. I like the person he is. I think he's very competent and has the potential to call a very fluent game, but I still think he's on a short leash. I know Tomlin does trust him more, but it just seems like he can only do so much, and I think that's really hindering him. But I feel like there is more trust, which is why we're seeing a little bit better of an offense. It's just, I don't know. I think we're the days of Ben, because Tomlin let him do whatever he wanted, so an offensive coordinator did not matter. But we don't have that guy yet that Tomlin can just say, okay, do your thing.
I mean, that's a pretty good point. Let's talk about that for a second. Does Russell Wilson deserve the same respect as a prime Ben? I think that that's actually a legitimate question. Russell Wilson, at the time that they brought in Fields, was he 22 of 25 at that point in the game? Something like that, when they trusted the other guy, the backup, to throw a deep ball down the field on the right side of the right sideline to try to clinch the game. I thought that was just insane. But your question is interesting, or at least the point that you raised. I mean, that is just a sign of not trusting your starter. I mean, with a real starter, there would be no question that he would be in the game at that point to seal it. Here, you have Justin Fields in the game. It's just, sometimes I wonder, man. Sometimes I wonder. I like Russell Wilson. I think he's doing overall a pretty good job, but that old adage, if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one, has sprung to mind a couple times in the past couple weeks based on the way that they used him, not necessarily the way he played, especially against Cleveland.
Yeah, I agree, Joe. I don't know, but I'm happy with the season so far. It's been fun, and we do need to turn that corner. It just seems like we just want to play close football games, and that's Tomlin, and we're going to do things to just keep every game close and make it hard for us as fans. But
the Steelers lead the NFL in field goals. I appreciate the call. They lead the NFL in field goals. I think that the number one mission for the rest of this season, and I think it's going to have to happen. And by the way, if they lose to Cincy, then that little voice, that little guy on your shoulder starts asking, are the wheels coming off? Is this 2020? And was it 18 that AB quit? What year was that? I think it was. When the Steelers had a 2.5 game lead in the division in the AB quit year and folded, completely folded. They lost. They didn't even win the division. They didn't even make the playoffs, for God's sakes. That team folded down the stretch, and we all remember the 11-0 team that became a completely different football team the second half of that, or I should say the last quarter of that season. They lost 5 of their final 6. So this feels like, even if it's not the hugest game in the world to win the division type thing, it feels very big, first of all, if you still have designs on the number one seed. But secondly, just if you want to avoid, like collapse avoidal, you know? Is avoidal a word or avoidance I'm looking for?
I think that would be the way to go, yeah.
I like the word avoidal. Plus, you cut down on the number of letters there, Sean.
Yeah, might as well. And crinkle it.
Let's go to Anthony in Oakland, one of our favorites. Happy Thanksgiving, sir.
Thank you, Joe. So my frustration with Arthur Smith was, it's like they didn't watch the film or tape of the New Orleans-Cleveland game prior to their game. Because when I watched that New Orleans-Cleveland game, they took advantage of Garrett's aggressiveness. When he would do, you know, similar to what he was doing through the Steelers, they did dump-off passes. There was one play they did, Alvin Kamara on a jet sweep, which hesitated. He hesitated for a minute, and they threw a slant for 30 yards. I'm sitting here saying, wait a minute. To see the play calling that the Steelers were doing, I'm saying, what is going on here?
Yeah, it felt like, now that you mention it, that they were more interested in proving they were the tougher team, the more physical team, we'll just line up and run it right at you kind of team. I think you're right about that.
Well, they get paid to watch to watch your opponent's prior game. And if you remember that game, New Orleans boat raced them. They hit 30-something points on them. I mean, Taysom Hill had 100 yards rushing himself. So that was my frustration. And look, last year down the stretch, the Steelers were doing things with their offense that we hadn't seen in a long time. And we don't see the slants anymore. We don't see the hook and goes that were so successful against Cincinnati that Saturday night in Seattle and in Baltimore. You kept those two guys on staff. They have no input at all?
I want to put those numbers together. I appreciate the call, Anthony. I want to put those numbers together of those two guys versus Artie so far this year, because
I have that for you, Joe.
You do?
I sure do.
Let's hear it, man.
So the Steelers, if I'm correct, are averaging just shy of 23 points per game this season. Okay. I have them at 22.9.
Yep.
With the co-coordinators, or whatever you want to dub it, last year, which I think was a 7-game regular season. I just went regular season, didn't include the playoffs, 19.7. So just about a field goal better this year, 3.2 points by my quick math.
And they were still a field goal better than Canada, who was at 16. But go ahead.
So I there is improvement, but to your point, it does seem like, you know, a field goal better than last year. That's because Boswell's kicking so many more field goals. So yes. I don't even know that it's leading to more touchdowns necessarily. They are scoring more, but it seems like primarily via the 3 points.
Yeah. And one thing they do well is they hold on to the ball, you know, and that helps your defense. Sometimes people think time of possession is an overrated stat. I think the way that Tomlin wants to win, love it or hate his ways of trying to win, that keeping your defense fresh is a factor. You know, that's a positive thing. Having said that, Matt Canada was 6 in the NFL in his last full season in time of possession. I just don't see enough improvement over Canada, and I see major regression in the very key area of the red zone.
How much better are you just from having better quarterback play, regardless of coordinator this year?
That might be a
3-point difference in its own right.
Could it be fair to ask the question, what would Canada have done with Russell Wilson?
Yes.
Fields compared to the two guys
he had? I mean, it's pretty clear Canada was not a good coordinator at all.
Yeah.
But I think if he had Fields and Wilson, he probably would have been better than what he produced last year with Kenny Pickett.
Let's go to Ken in South Park. Hello, Ken.
Ken, how you doing, Joe?
Good. What's up?
Hey, I was wondering, like, why when the Steelers get down into the red zone, can you imagine a defense if he put Justin Fields, Cam Hayward in the backfield, and Broderick Jones, maybe do the push?
Cam Hayward? Like Refrigerator Perry, you mean?
Yeah.
Like gave him the ball or had him be the push guy from behind?
Yeah, give him the ball like at the 2-yard line, 1-3-yard line. With Broderick Jones behind him and maybe another stud pushing.
This is unbelievable. I like this. Sean, what do you make of this?
Is there a third Hayward that they can get to put all the Haywards back in the backfield together?
I don't know. Thank you, sir.
We tried that with the Watts family. It didn't work.
That's actually a great line by this guy. Wow. I didn't expect him to come back firing one more time.
He was saving that to the end, yeah.
Yeah. We tried that. Wow, that's what a line that was. Although, listen, hold on a second here. Do they miss Derek Watt in these situations? He actually converted a bunch of first downs last year.
I guess. I mean, yeah, you would think that you don't necessarily need a fullback just to convert.
You like giving the ball to Cam Hayward down at the two?
Yeah, I'm sure. Might as well.
Hey, listen, they can't be worse. As I said, Kevin Gorman, his numbers here, they're 11 of 19 on 3rd and 1. That's embarrassing, really. 11 of 19 on 3rd and 1?
Is there another team Is there another team in the NFL that has mastered the pushing the quarterback yet?
Well, even they're getting stopped sometimes now, but...
It seems
I would have to look at that. I honestly, yeah, I'd be lying to you.
Yeah, it seems like something that should be able to be replicated by other competent NFL teams, right?
There's never been a team that's really replicated Refrigerator Perry.
Yeah, well, the crazy thing about the Eagles is they lost what I thought would be the most instrumental part of that, which is their center. But they're still doing it to, I mean.
It's hard for me to imagine that if you lined up a 230-pound athlete at quarterback, which is what Justin Fields is, he's a phenomenal athlete. And he's 230 pounds behind Zach Frazier with two road grader guards. And again, their pass protection, I think sometimes interior can be leaky. But say Amalo and McCormick are I think, should be good in these situations. And then you have Najee as the pusher guy from behind. Just pretend like he's running. We've all seen him run like an absolute maniac. Have him push the quarterback like that. You can't get a yard doing that. If that fails, I am ready to give the ball to Cam Hayward down at the two. That guy was legendary, wasn't he?
It's mind-boggling if you consistently fail on 3rd and 1, 4th and 1, whatever, why you don't go with that approach and just see if you can make it work. Now, I guess the only
concern... The tush-push, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm joking kind of about Cam, but I will say they can't do worse.
Yeah. The only concern is if it's Wilson. I always wonder, like, the quarterback's just kind of a rag doll in those scenarios. Are they worried about his health?
Then use Justin.
Well, yeah, that does make sense to me.
Be more creative. You know, we've seen the Chiefs over the years with all kinds of... Now they ran into some short yardage situations at some points last year. I don't know how they're doing in those situations this year. But there were headlines in, you know, October, November of last year. What's happened to the Chiefs' short yardage game? I think they got that straightened out, as evidenced by winning the Super Bowl and what I saw against Buffalo and then San Fran in the postseason. But still, over the years, and I realize they have Patrick Mahomes. I do realize that. But they and this is what this emailer to me alluded to, is they seem to, instead of trying to prove that we can just push you back man on man, we'll get creative and out-scheme you in those situations. I mean, it is only a yard.
I have breaking news, by the way, Joe.
Eberflus?
He gone. Fired today. Apparently after he had a press conference, which seems kind of ridiculous.
That seems unusually cruel.
He had a press conference this morning to discuss the state of the Bears and then got fired before noon.
Listen, I don't like to see anybody get fired, but I'm sure he's getting paid an enormous amount of money, millions of dollars. And as we open the show with, that was a top five horrific coaching decision, coaching move in the history of pro football.
Yeah, I like what we did there.
And it was a top one worst post-game news conference in the history of football. And again, if you think I'm overdoing it there, engaging in hyperbole, if you will, or even if you won't, Sean, don't call me Seth Meyers. Listen to Jimmy Johnson and just play the first part of this. He's been around a while.
In 70 years of coaching at all three levels, I've never seen dysfunction that cost a team an opportunity to win the game.
Wow. Unbelievable. So he had to go. I just read you the numbers. They're astounding. He's literally, Matt Eberflus is literally the worst close game coach who ever lived. Josh Dubow from the Associated Press. 221 coaches have had at least 20 games decided by 7 points or less. All right? So in the history of the league, games decided by seven or less, you have to have at least 20 of those to qualify. 221 coaches have. Matt Eberflus is 5-17 in those games for a 227 winning percentage. Out of 221 all time, well, he ranks 221st. He's the worst close game coach who ever walked the planet.
Justin Fields knows that pretty well, I would imagine.
Man, you're right about that. I wasn't even thinking of that connection. Under Matt Eberflus, the Bears are 5-9. This is from Tom Fornelli. What a great tweet this is. Under Matt Eberflus, the Bears are 5-19 in one-score games, 3-19 on the road, and 2-13 in the NFC North. But they do have one timeout remaining. That is tremendous. That's as good as the last guy who called us, right?
The Watt brothers.
Yes, yeah. That was amazing. Although, again, Derek Watt was good on short yardage last year. At least that's my memory. Maybe somebody has an advanced analytic stat that will prove me wrong. Now I'm starting to wonder if they miss him.
They miss the fullbacks. Need to get, who was it, Lester and Dan Kreider and all them back.
I mean, there's still a place for the game, especially here's, well, and I know
Baltimore
is,
uses one.
So does San Francisco.
Yeah, use check.
When you portray yourself as we want to be the big, bad, physical Steelers, that's what we want to get back to. And they're on the record with that. Mike Tomlin, Andy Weidel, Omar Khan. We want that to be our personality. And this is one of the most worn out topics in Pittsburgh sports radio history, probably. Why not use a real fullback? I mean, sure, there are fullbacks. You just mentioned two of them who can do a little more than that, too. If you needed them in an emergency to catch a pass or carry the ball, they could do that, too. But mostly they hammer people in the run game. I don't understand why Connor Hayward is your answer as a part fullback, part H-back, part this, part that. I like Connor Hayward, by the way. I think he should. I think if we're talking red zone, he could actually be a little bit of a weapon for you if you throw him the ball. But as a blocking fullback, I don't know, man.
Would that? So I know Washington's been doing better in terms of his pass routes, but yeah. Is that a scenario where they've used him enough? As like
that last caller might want them to give the ball to Mount Washington. Listen, I think jump balls to Mount Washington, post ups to Freiermuth or Washington, little jump balls to Pickens might be a better option than turning 6 yards deep in the backfield and handing it to Jalen Warren behind an offensive line that isn't getting it done.
Well, Washington has to know to jump, I guess, because he struggled to do that on that one interception.
That's a very fair point. What's a jump ball that wouldn't be a jump ball? 50-50 ball. A a plastered to the ground ball. He doesn't have to jump. He just reaches up with one arm and he should be able to make a play. I think a little bit of that, a little bit of rollout with Russ or Fields in short yardage where they have options.
Maybe
you know?
Use Mike Williams.
Mike Williams in the certainly their red zone issues. That guy's made his career has been in the red zone, basically. He's had one career outside the red zone, which hasn't been great, one in the red zone, which has been very good. So why isn't he being used in the red zone?
Did he get too late with the moving train? Is that the issue with him too?
I don't know. I mean, at some point you just tell a guy, run straight down there. We're going to throw a moon ball, period, like they did against the Commanders. He has no targets since then. Do we blame Artie Smith for that? I do. Or maybe Tomlin. I don't know.
Well, it's either you're not using the guy to his potential or you brought in a guy who's a dud, which would also go back on a miscue for the Steelers. But I think Williams is serviceable, certainly. I don't think that, you know, he's that far past his prime where he can't contribute at all. And if
no,
so,
he
why
made a
did
great
they make
catch.
The trade? Yeah.
There is a lot to be told on this Steelers season. I think this is these final six games are the referendum on Arthur Smith, on Mike Tomlin as coach of the year, on Omar Khan's off season. Man, there's a lot to be told. And I swear, you know, and this feels like a big game for the direction in which the Steelers are going to go. They lose, and obviously the division is still right there. All that still, you sweep the Ravens, all that's still right there. I get it. But there's just that little birdie. Maybe it's a little man, actually, standing on my right shoulder. Very small. Inch High Private Eye. You remember that show?
Not at all. Nope.
Just whispering to me, it's all going to fall apart. It's all going to fall apart. I don't believe him. But they lose to the Bengals, and I bet you his voice grows a little louder. I bet you his voice grows a little louder. They've hammered some bad teams this year. I'm talking offensively. But man, against some of the good teams they've played, again, they're averaging under 20. However, you know, when I look at this Bengals game, and I started off the week saying they were going to lose. Now I'm wavering on that a little bit. Just a little bit. Because as good as this Bengals offense is, they've had some duds early and later on in the season. You know, you want to throw out the Patriots game where they were horrible at the start of the year. Okay. But they didn't have a good game against the Giants. Couldn't run the ball. They scored 17 points. They didn't have a good game at Cleveland a month ago, a little over a month ago. They put up 21 points. Couldn't run the ball. They were horrific. The last game of October against Philly. Again, no running game, no nothing really, 17 points. And then even that Chargers game, while they were explosive and came back in the game, they had a 6-point first half. And then when they had a chance late, multiple possessions to get that done, you could say they missed field goals. They did. They did miss field goals. That's true. But they weren't finishing drives either at all. And then they couldn't get it done late. It was miss field goal, punt, end of game. Still some problems protecting the quarterback there. They're the Bengals, for God's sakes. They're hardly infallible. Let's talk about what we see with this game coming up. And then we got Donnie Football, top of the hour. Fan hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC service for over 50 years. It's 12:49, time to get to Tom Fridays for Juicy Steaks, Meats, and More. 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township. Celebrating 50 years in the South Hills, and the Fan Hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Donnie Football joining us on a Donnie Football Friday at the top of the hour. In the meantime, I happened to tune in this morning to NHL Network, and they have a documentary that's run many times over the years on the first outdoor game on American soil. And that, of course, was in Buffalo with the Penguins, with Sidney Crosby scoring the game-winning goal. We all remember that. It was a phenomenal event. They didn't even know it was going to sell out, and they filled a football stadium, and the weather was absolutely ideal for television anyway, which was snow falling like ticker tape. And there were all kinds of problems with the ice, and in the end, who cares? It was the rare occasion in sports where the first event was the greatest one and never to be matched. That was absolutely the greatest outdoor game. I can't really think of another one. I mean, I think of the one where Sid got hurt against the Capitals on a crappy, rainy night at the artist then known as Heinz Field. But, they've had some cool venues, things like that. That was the greatest one never to be matched. And the documentary is phenomenal. I happen to be in it. Did you know that, Sean? Don't call me Seth Meyers.
Wow. What's your role in that?
They interviewed me and a guy from Buffalo as the media guys. You know, every one of these documentaries has the athletes, the coaches. In this case, they had both Mike Lang and Doc Emmerich, the announcers, and then the obligatory media guy. I think it was Mike Harrington from Buffalo and me. But what got me to thinking, or what I was thinking about, was the passage of time in sports. And how a lot of us measure our lives, if we love sports, and if you're listening out there, I'm sure you do, most of you, how events in our lives are measured against sports. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, when I was, for people out here of a certain age, I was such and such years old when the Steelers finally won the Super Bowl in 74, or yeah, I was back in high school when Santonio Holmes made that catch. And that's the way our lives are measured along a timeline, is sporting events. And this one was up there, honestly. And the Penguins have done bigger things than that. They've won cups. They've had, amazing milestones and memorable games. But this is one of them. This is one of them. And it's up there on the most memorable sporting events I've ever covered. 13-9 is one of them. The wild card game is one. Super Bowl against the Seahawks is one. AFC title. No, I wasn't at that AFC title game. That one I watched against the Ravens. I watched that one on TV. Couple as a fan growing up. But in terms of covering sporting events, the first Winter Classic was just seared onto my psyche forever. You had fans from both cities tailgating as you pulled up before the game as if it were a football game. And then just the scene of both teams coming out in lines of lit torches. Remember that? And you had the little kids tapping their sticks. You had the uniforms were incredible. You had Therrien coaching the Penguins, Lindy Ruff the Sabres. And then it came down to Sidney Crosby. And what I was thinking about, too, watching that today, was how quickly everything passes. And I don't even mean that necessarily in a depressing way, although I suppose it is. The youth on that team. Sid looked like he was 10. Colby Armstrong, Ryan Malone, Brooks Orpik. Like, just the early days, the rising of what would be a great, great hockey team. We wondered, could they match the Oilers with all this young talent? Could they match the Edmonton Oilers? I don't know if they did that, but they wound up with three cups over a period of time. And when Sid scored that goal, they were kids. Ryan Malone was a child at that point. The whooping and the hollering and the yelling from Sid after he beat Ryan Miller, it was just so memorable. And I guess as we see this era come to a close, there's room for critique and anger and everything else. But for me, there's also room for joy of what we got to see, what I got to cover too, was amazing. Truly amazing. And that was one of the landmark events. I don't know if there's people out there that went to that game. I'm sure there are tons of you that remember watching it. But that was a truly unique event in the history of the NHL.
I'm guessing that kind of set the stage for so many Winter Classics that followed, right? If that game had...
Too many Winter Classics that followed.
But I'm assuming if that game did not turn out well and it was kind of a dud and there was... I mean, you mentioned there were some issues, but kind of minor relative to the success of it.
Right. For a regular hockey game, it was a disaster. There's holes on the ice.
Did they have like a glare or something that also stopped playing?
I don't remember about that. I do remember Sid saying that it feels like when I'm carrying the puck, it's a 5-pound dumbbell. In overtime, they were lugging the puck, or in the shootout, they were lugging the puck through snow. So from a regular, if you're just judging it as some cynics did at the time, like, you know, is this a real hockey game? Who the hell cares? It's one of the most memorable sporting events of all time. It really was. And what was forgotten about it, and I had forgotten a lot, was Chris Letang, who also looked like he was 9 years old. He scored, the Sabres were up in the shootout 1-0. And Letang scored a ridiculous goal to set up Sidney Crosby. Ty Conklin was in goal. He then made a save. I forget on who. But if Letang doesn't score that goal, then Sid's goal at the most can tie it. And Letang, when nobody really could deke or do much through the snow, did this ridiculous backhanded deke on Ryan Miller, who was gracious enough to partake in the documentary.
I was going to say, usually something like that, you just come in and just take a wrist shot, right?
Yeah. Which a lot of them did. But he deked Miller through the snow. I think the puck disappeared for a second, literally, and was just so skilled. And what a great player. And what a privilege to see these guys for this long. And there's a time and place, and we've already talked about it many times, for should they blow it up, should they not, you know, should they ask some of these guys to move their no movement clauses, all of that. Should they fire Sullivan, all of that. And this was going way back to Therrien. But man, they were just kids then. They were just kids, and it was so fun to watch that team. So fun to watch it grow together. Jordan Staal, all those guys. Anyway, it's the passage of time. Sean, don't call me Seth Meyers. And it's happening all around us. My little daughter, she was once the size of a squirrel. Now she's 16 and driving a car. All of it. It happens. I'm putting up the Christmas tree today. I just put up the Christmas tree 10 minutes ago and took it down. The years, as you get older, flow by faster. Do you know what I mean?
I do, yeah. I mean, I'm to the point now where I'm older than just about any professional athlete, so that makes me feel old.
Yeah.
And then seeing guys, like you mentioned Crosby, but, you know, people, I see the start of their career, and now their career's already over because they retired, or they're known as, like, the old person, like a Crosby or a LeBron, who